Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Ryan Kinnear from Phoenix, Arizona. Ryan has SMA Type 2, and he is an avid fisherman and hunter, which we will talk about on the show today and more. So, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Looking forward to this one. So, Ryan, just to start off, can you tell listeners just a little bit about yourself and really what it was like for you growing up with SMA?
Sure. So I'm 45 years old, which is pretty old for someone with SMA. Moved from Minnesota to Arizona in like 83. Spent most of my life hunting and fishing. Did some college. Lately, though, the last 10 years, I've just been spending it trying to hunt big game and do as much fishing as I can and put together some social media. Just trying to have fun out there.
That's awesome. And yeah, let's talk about, so I read the news story it was the Glendale, Arizona newspaper. And, you know, they talked about your fishing background and how you and your dad built adaptive equipment so that you could continue to do those things when you started to lose physical strength. So can you talk more about that and how that process evolved?
Sure. So basically when I started back in the early 80s, I was able to, hold up a rifle, hold up a fishing pole or a cast. So for example, I would spend hours and hours figuring out different ways of casting fishing poles in my my pool. I had a big pool in my backyard. So of course, people with SMA have to do things a little bit differently than most folks. So I have to figure out all sorts of flipping techniques and all sorts of stuff. As my disease progressed, we would continue to have to reinvent everything. Basically, you have to start from the ground up, take what you know and build from there. So at first we had just built like trays that went on my wheelchair where I could still use my arms, but just a little bit of assistance. I'm talking about shooting right now. Then we had to build bigger systems. And finally I got to the point where my hands pretty much don't work at all anymore. So we built a very large system that incorporates my wheelchair completely into it. So for elevation, I just used the power seat elevation, the tilt function. And then to aim left and right, I just turn the wheelchair. And I have a harness that goes on me to hold it against my body so that I can do micro movements. So if anybody's listening, when you're shooting, you have macro movements where you have to move from point A to point B, quickly. But you're staring out there at a target that's, in my case, I can shoot out to a mile or a mile and a half. So your every little heartbeat, every little breath causes the point of impact to change by 6-7 feet. So I have to be able to control it with my body. So I control it with like chest compressions and breathing and clenching and all sorts of good stuff to get it super accurate. And then I have a 3-gram micro switch under my left thumb. So hopefully I don't hit any bumps, but otherwise I just sneeze and she goes off. One of the neat things about it is when I'm really in my mojo, everything will just be perfect. And I'll be able to pull the trigger without actually any, conscious thought behind it, just muscle memory, which is pretty awesome. It's hard to get to that point, but you get there.
No, that's really cool. And I imagine it was a lot of, just learning and adapting, with your dad too, especially. And can you talk about that relationship? You share that love of fishing and hunting together, and together you were able to build all this equipment.
Yeah, so dad and I, we build everything together. Basically, the way it works is I lie in bed and figure things out all night and put things together and take them apart in my head. And then get up in the morning and try to explain them to dad, go out, grab the welder, put together the processes, see what works. Obviously, a lot of field testing. there's a lot of time involved in this. So a lot of people don't understand when you're building something that has to be so specialized, it can take months, if not years, to perfect to what you're trying to do. So for example, the big rifle I have is called a 338 Lapua. It was designed to shoot out to 2,200 yards. Now that might seem odd to most folks, but it's a hyper long range rifle. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of engineering going into it. If you go look at some of the pictures of it, you'll see that the whole thing's run from electronics, firing from solenoids and all sorts of good stuff. So Dad and I, we build everything together, go back and forth and try to figure it out. One of the problems I have is I make things super complex, and then I have to try to make them a lot less complex in order to make them work out in the field. Because once you get out in the field, man, things start to get really hard really fast, especially when it's negative, 15 degrees or something like that.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, I went out to California last year for the SMA conference, and we went through Arizona, and it's just the heat out there and the terrain. I imagine there are just numerous obstacles to navigate there.
Yeah. So I'll give you a fun story. So we hunt in northern Arizona, and what we did is we have a Nissan Pro4X. We took and we built the whole back end of it up so that there's ramps and a winch. And we winched myself and my wheelchair into the back of the truck. Sorry, I got a hiccup. So we winched myself and my wheelchair into the back of the truck and then strapped me down, and we take off across the countryside like that. So I'll be sitting in the back of that thing when it's, 100 degrees outside, or in one case, it was negative 17. And it gets cold, boy. Oof. So we built all sorts of heaters onto my wheelchair. So it's kind of like a hot air balloon. So if you think about it, we took a poncho, military poncho, and we pump heat up underneath it so that I don't have any weight on my arms. So basically I can go out there wearing, just whatever clothes I want, nothing that's constrictive, you know what I mean? I'm sure you have the problem, or most people that may have the problem, of clothes being too constrictive.
Oh,
and
yes.
It really super eliminates makes their movement extremely difficult. So one of the problems is I have to try to manage that constriction. So by pumping hot air up underneath the poncho, I can keep my arms exactly where I need them to be. At the same time, though, man, I am strapped down to the hilt. I am like, I got my arms strapped down. I got my chest strapped down. We actually take trailer straps and we ratchet my chest into the wheelchair. So I'm like actually like basically bolted to the seat, because we're hitting some big bumps, man.
I can only imagine. I mean, I'm not an outdoors person, but knowing, like you said, the constraints that you have with clothing and everything else, how you manage that, and I can imagine it's a whirlwind, but yeah, rewarding nonetheless. Oh.
So imagine trying to drive across a wash in the back of a pickup truck, right, with a rifle strapped to your chest, and you're hitting bumps, and you can't like lose control of your wheelchair or anything like that, and you're just getting slammed. I mean, the thought process of that is just insane.
Man, you're braver than I am. I don't think I could do those kinds of scenarios, but I love how you managed, with the adaptations and being able to, just navigate all that. It's really cool.
So one of the most interesting ones that I've built is I actually built a shotgun rig that looks like, have you ever looked at like World War II, the anti-aircraft guns?
Yeah.
So so I built a shotgun rig that's built like that. So it attaches to my wheelchair, attaches to my shoulders. The sight picture is up really high so I can look across the gun. And then I'm able to swing the gun just like any other, not like any other person, but swing the gun like you're supposed to. And I'm actually able to shoot birds. Like I do a lot of dove hunting. So I'm sure you can imagine, a guy in a wheelchair with a shotgun strapped to his face, spinning around in circles, trying to hit these little doves that are flying by at 50 miles an hour. It's a real trip, man.
I can imagine the reactions you get from people.
Oh man, they get tripped out. Yeah, they come. I always say I feel like the cutest girl at the prom. Like everybody's got to come over to see me. I get people come across. They're like 400 yards away, and they'll see me across the field, and they'll be like, "What the heck?" And they come walking all the way over. There's a guy in a wheelchair. My favorite like, one is I used.
Yeah, go ahead.
I used. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I used to do a lot of hunting around Luke Air Force bases, so they have a lot of dairies. You know, they usually put like dairies around places where people don't want to be because it's too loud. So I would do a lot of bird hunting out there, and the different pilots would be out there practicing their takeoffs and landings and circling around, and they come flying down real low and tilt their wings to look at me as they fly by, because I'm sure they've never seen it before.
Oh, I love it. I was going to say, that's like, imagine people just putting all that on TikTok. Like, you kind of just like, am I seeing this right? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people think it's cosplay, which is quite funny.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You know, I mean, some of the...
Oh, go ahead.
Some of the clips I've got, I think 2 or 3 million, especially on the shotguns. And it's funny because a lot of people think it's like fake or cosplay. They just can't comprehend. I mean, it is a little radical. I mean,
no, man, I have a Jayco robotic arm, and when I take those to Comic Cons, people ask if like I built it myself. I'm like, yeah, no, yeah. I'm not that talented. This is a $50,000 piece of equipment. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That'd be a little rough to build, boy.
Right. But I love those stories. And just circling back a little bit, so can you talk a little more about just adolescence and kind of like what you were doing, you know, in school, and then like career-wise, like what is kind of like your younger days looked like?
So one of the interesting things is back when I was going to school, there wasn't a lot of programs. I don't know how old you are, but
I'm 30.
Back when I was going to 30. So yeah. They started implementing a lot of the programs basically right after I left, mm-hmm. with different assistants and caregivers and classrooms and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. So when I was going to school, they had nothing, right? So like when I went to school, if I had to get through a door, I just had to ram it, you know. I had no assistance, so all the school kids would have to help me with my books, stuff like that. Definitely a lot different than the way it is nowadays, that's for sure.
Oh, I mean, yeah, ADA, you know, changed a ton, and we've just seen a lot of advances. Still have a ways to go, of course, but there has been significant advancements in just the past couple of decades.
One of my interesting stories is I was in accounting in high school, and somehow I always tried to be not the last person out of the classroom, but this day I was the last person. So I'm heading towards the door, and the door closes and latches. So I got stuck in the classroom for 2 periods. I couldn't get the door open, and no other classes were coming in, so that was a bit of a problem. I have to wonder if it was the last period of the day, how long I'd have been there.
Oh gosh, can you imagine like that? Yeah. It's crazy. Just the things like that. Like I had an aide with me growing up in school, and yeah, and I've talked with older people at SMA as well who were also in school before, accommodations like that came into play. And it's a different world. It's crazy.
So I'll tell you about a crazy accommodation.
Okay.
So back before ADA, back before all this stuff. So the principals and everybody are trying to figure out a way to help me use the restroom when I was at school, right? So obviously that becomes a problem. Easy for most people, hard when you're sitting in a wheelchair. Gravity is a real pain in the tush, as it were. So the principal and everybody got together trying to make an accommodations, and this is the accommodation they came up with. And this is all true. So their plan was they were going to get a Hoyer lift, get a rolling commode, put it in the nurse's office, right? But the nurse's office bathroom, the door was too narrow for me to go in there. So they're going to take me out of my wheelchair, disrobe me, put me in the rolling commode, roll my naked ass across the campus to an accommodating bathroom, do my business, clean me up, roll me my naked ass back across the campus, and put me back together again. And that was their actual official accommodation.
And it's just like, I've heard stories like that too. And it's just crazy that people think that they don't even consider, you know, the lack of dignity that comes into play there. And just the, you know, the just basic decency.
The only real regret I have is I didn't take him up on the offer. Being 45 back when I was in high school, obviously it would have been embarrassing. But now that I'm 45, I regret not taking him up on it just one time. Just that would have been one hell of a good story, boy.
And just to say, hey, this was the legal accommodation that the administrators provided for me.
Yeah, which was the best part about it is they were absolutely serious.
Oh, yeah. I believe it.
Yeah. But yeah, after I left, they built a whole like facility for disabled folks and started having attendants and odd mag doors and all that good stuff. But I was never like that.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's insane how much has changed. Just wild, just in the last few years and few decades.
Like I was telling my generation, I'm a pretty old bugger. You know, back in the the 70s and 80s, folks with SMA didn't live very long.
Uh-huh.
So basically the generation behind me, like your generation, they tend to do a lot better. I think a lot of the medical, you know, technology and systems have improved to help us live longer. But so it was definitely a different world.
Oh, for sure. And we'll talk about like treatment journey a little bit, but also what were you doing? So once you graduated from school, what were you doing back then? And like, what's kind of like your life been like since then?
So I did a little bit of college, not too much of that. Just went on, tried to live, man.
Yeah. And what does your daily life look like? Like what, you know, like just typical day of the week for you.
So a typical day, usually, well, I do lots of different things, but I mean, like every average person, you know, spend time watching TVs and movies and stuff like that. But otherwise, I do a lot of fishing. I try to get out fishing like once a week. When the weather permits, I try to do a lot of target shooting. I do also do a lot of barbecuing. I like to barbecue. That's something you can do in the backyard and you don't have to get out of the house. So making big briskets and ribs and chicken and cooking up all sorts of fish and whatnot. I like to tinker with things. I don't know about you, but sometimes it's hard to turn off my brain. So I gotta push it in a certain direction. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And Ryan, you might have asked like what your living situation is like, and like, do you have caregivers or who do you live with?
So I live with my folks right now and I have caregivers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And when you first started at this, something I just ask a lot of people on the show, well, like when you first started hiring caregivers, what was it like for you, just that process? And I mean, because I know for me, you know, it's an experience when you have to, when you, the first time you're hiring people, not your parents, to do all your care.
Yeah, it's basically I didn't have any caregivers up until I was 18. When I turned 18, I had a really bad pneumonia and had to be intubated and all sorts of surgeries. While they were intubating me, they ripped out my larynx. So they had to, that's why I had this beautiful raspy voice now. They had to put together my whole throat and all that stuff. But anyway, after that point, I started getting caregivers. Yeah, caregiver experience is definitely interesting. You definitely get some very interesting people. Some are absolutely fantastic. Some are just, you know, off the wall crazy, to be honest with you. And you never quite know what you're going to get. The main problem is with it is you're always relying on them actually showing up, which is sometimes a bigger problem than you would think. Because oftentimes, a lot of people that take caregiving jobs, especially in states that don't pay very well, you're not exactly getting people that are very, what's the word? Not qualified, but are not even capable. Reliable. That's the best word. You're not getting people that are very reliable, which is why they're probably a caregiver in the first place. So I've had many occasions where, you know, nobody just shows up. So you get some PTSD from that stuff, boy. Because
I've been there too.
Your whole day gets messed up, or maybe your week or your month or your year, trying to figure out how to get a new caregiver.
Did you ever have any who stayed like long term? Because I know I'm an anomaly here, but I had the same primary for 7 years actually. And then, I know that's unheard of, but he was with me for a long time. Had others in the mix there too, but yeah, he was with me through like a lot of my college time and post college and all that.
Yeah, mostly. I guess I've been fortunate. I'm a pretty easy guy to get along with. So, most of my caregivers. So basically, the way it works is you go through a lot of ones that don't work out. You know,
sure.
In my case, you know, ones that last a month or 2 months. And then most of the time they lasted like 5, 6 years, 10 years, lasted a long time. I try to keep the job real, stable for them, so they know what they're doing, know what they're getting into, and all sorts of stuff. Plus, I'm a pretty easygoing guy, so.
Oh, that's
but
great.
It is hard, man.
Yeah. It's a never-ending challenge, and you know, it's like you want to hold on to the good people forever, but you also know it's not a permanent job, and it just requires constant rotation. And like you said, you deal with all kinds of people, and yeah, you just manage and adapt each day.
Absolutely. So, how many caregivers do you have?
Right now, I have three plus my parents, so I live at home as well. And yeah, I have three that. One of them is going to go to med school next year. The other two are in nursing school, and they're all working out great. But yeah, it's a constantly changing thing. I had one for like a little more than the first half of this year, who's fantastic, and he really wanted to stay longer, but he was going from nursing school to a PhD program, and unfortunately just had to like drop it for time constraints, which I totally understand. And so that's there's all
like,
those factors
like
that come into play.
It seems like the best caregivers are the ones that are going into the medical fields.
Yeah.
Although it
yeah.
seems like they don't last very long.
It's like, because it's great experience for them, and they always love doing it. I mean, I've had great experience with people in that field. But they do go on to, you know, to become doctors, nurses, et cetera.
Back when I started, I think the salary was like $7 an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think in some states it's still like that. It's a huge problem there with, in terms of like, that's why it's so hard for many of us to get reliable people, because unfortunately it's not a high paying job. I mean, right now mine is pretty good, but yeah, it varies, and there's so many factors that come into play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what else can I tell you about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I read that article in the Glendale newspaper, and so can you talk a little bit about your experiences with EVRISD and what that's like, what that has been like being on treatment?
Sure, absolutely. So EVRISD was interesting. It'd been around for a couple of years. I hadn't tried it out and decided to start using it about 2 years ago. It started working pretty quick. I definitely started noticing a little bit more stamina when I started taking it. In the news article, you'll read that I talk a lot about shivering. It's involuntary, muscle control. Basically, the way it works is I would go out and I would do something. I don't know about you back in the day, but I always told people I'm like a lizard. So, or at least I was before RISD. So I go out in the cold and I just get colder and colder and colder until I get to a point where I start actually shivering. But it'd take a lot to get to that point, man. I was being like hypothermia and hands not working and just totally messed up. But now I get the smallest amount of cool on me and I'll just start shivering like crazy. Actually, it gets to a point where it's I'm trying to learn how normal folks do it, because I'll start shivering and then I'll overheat and I got to take off layers. because then I'll actually literally overheat and start sweating. And you never want to start sweating, man, when it's like 30 degrees outside, because then you got yourself in real trouble. So I'm starting to learn that process, which is it's quite interesting. One of the weirdest things about it was when I first started shivering on the university, I didn't realize how painful shivering was. Like all the muscles in my body are all firing continuously for like 2 hours, and my body's like screaming at me because it's basically doing a workout. You know what I mean? So I'm just sitting there like, holy crap, this is painful. I refer to people that walk as pedestrians. So I was like, how do the pedestrians handle this, man? This is painful.
It. And it is, I mean, well, a lot of my coworkers and I write about being out in the cold and what that's like. And and especially when you're adapting to new changes with your body, it adds a whole nother dimension there, and you're another thing to adapt to.
Yeah, I was just out fishing last week, and the wind was blowing. It was probably only like 55 degrees or so, but it was blowing hard, man. And I was freezing and just shivering. So I put my jacket. I don't wear a jacket. I wear ponchos and stuff like that, trying not to limit my arm movement. I don't know about you, man, but putting a jacket on is just a major pain in the rear.
I
Like,
can't do
oh,
it. No.
do that. So anyway, I put my poncho on, and instantly I just start sweating. I'm like, what is going on? So I went from like shivering my rear end off to like sweating buckets to shivering my rear off. Man, it was rough. But I'll get it figured out. It just takes time.
It does. I mean, I'm the same way. I can't put on, it's really hard to wear heavy articles of clothing in the wintertime, like as much as I want to stay warm, but it's just like it limits my movement. But I did recently get a hand warmer device, so hopefully that'll help. But I'm the same way. And anytime it's like a heavy layer, like I have a poncho as well, but it's just like it really weighs me down and makes it difficult to drive.
So one of the things I've been doing lately is I just got a cheap hair dryer, like literally a hair dryer, and I'll find an outlet and plug it in and just jam it up underneath the poncho and fill the poncho up with hot air and go about my business. It'll knock the cold off. It works pretty well.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's only like $10, so.
We definitely find those little devices and stuff to make life easier. It's a lot of just life hacks, we share.
Yeah. Well, do you drive with your hands or drive with sip and puff, or how do you do about it?
I still use my hand, my right one, and a
Yeah.
joystick. Yeah.
So I drive with my right hand, but man, when it gets cold, like every little movement is like near impossible.
Right.
So I gotta try to push as much heat as I can. So I built these gloves. So when we're out hunting, especially but basically any hunting, it gets wicked cold, man. So I built these big box gloves there that I put on my arms, and then I pump heat up into my arms
Yeah.
so I can keep my arms at like 110 degrees. So like everything's like moving real nice, and it's fantastic. The only problem is if I ever run out of battery, it's oof. Going from 110 to negative 17 is a little rough.
That's always a situation you never want to be in, but
Yeah.
oh, that's good. But that's great though. I'm glad, like the treatments worked out well for you, and it always adds another thing to adapt to, but it seems like it's been a good process for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a sip here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things with Evrysdi I've noticed is my stamina is way up. I'm able to there for a while. It was getting where I can only go a couple hundred yards, and then I have to sit and take a break. And now I can go pretty well, go for a pretty long drive without having to stop, which is pretty interesting.
That's great. Yeah, that's really cool
Definitely,
to see.
definitely a lot of neck strength. Definitely being able to talk louder. I've noticed a lot of my friends that were on it were actually able to, vocalize a lot louder than before. You know, back in the day, a lot of the SMA folks were always talking in whispers, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, I've been there. Yeah. And it's just like I remember constantly having to repeat myself a lot of time. I'm on Spinraza, but similar thing, treatment wise, it's like, yeah, that's helps big time.
So that's interesting. The other one is swallowing. It's definitely helped with swallowing a good bit. It's also helped with going to the bathroom too, which is sure most people don't think about that, but you got all those involuntary muscles in your abdomen doing their work and all that good stuff. So it seems like it helped with that. Also lost some weight. So I think I'm burning a lot more calories on it. And I'm sure that has to do with the shivering and everything else. You know, when you're actually activating your muscles and burning, burning energy, you're going to lose weight. So that's one of the interesting side effects to it. Positive side effects, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's really cool. Well, Ryan, this has been great talking with you today. And just wrapping up here. So, you talked about, adapting and then working with caregivers and like the good and bad experiences there. What advice do you have for others in the SMA community, particularly those with SMA?
So I was thinking about that last night. One of the things I would like to direct at, like, especially parents that have children with SMA is, don't coddle the child, let them go out and fail and succeed and suffer and figure things out and do things their way. Every time you take something from them and do it for them, it's an opportunity they have lost to learn. So basically when I was growing up, I was would be referred to as a latchkey kid. So nowadays that would be thought of as completely, abhorrent to take someone like us and just let us go for, 4 hours at a time with no adult supervision or anything else. But that's the way I was raised. I get up at, 7 o'clock in the morning, watch some fishing shows, and then I was gone, man. At 8 a.m. in the morning, I'd be out the door, going around trying to cause as much trouble as possible. And then I'd either come back home when the lights turned on the street, or I heard someone yelling for me. That was it. So, I mean, I was just out there doing things. And I see a lot of people nowadays, they don't want their children to go through any hardships, especially they look at their child with SMA and they say, oh, this person's already going through so many hardships. Just let me open up that bottle for them. You know what I mean? Well, let them open up their own damn bottle. You know what I mean? They'll figure it out, especially if they have the ability to do it. So that's the main thing that I was thinking about last night.
Oh, that's great. No, I appreciate your perspective there. And this has been, it's been really cool to me learning about the, all the adaptive equipment you have for fishing and just how you manage all that. And I look forward to reading more about your adventures there and everything going on.
Yeah. And if you want, it's, I'm basically everywhere. That guy in the wheelchair.
Okay.
Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and everywhere else. I guess it's called X now, but wherever.
Yeah. Very cool. I'll definitely plug that in the description here when this goes out.
Okay.
Oh, awesome. Well, Ryan, it was great talking with you. Thanks so much again for sharing your story. And I'll put those in the description so people can go follow you.
Very good, sir.
Awesome. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us on social media and our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums. a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.